I think Moorhead makes more noise than you do. Oh. Hi, everybody. My name's Johnny Harris, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here sober. And even more, I'm glad that you're here sober. And the people that own this hotel better hope we don't drink. If this little show that you've had is any indication, I'm going to say a lot of prayers that you don't drink, I'll tell you. I'd like to thank the committee for giving me the privilege of being here, for inviting my lovely wife and I to share in a celebration of Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe that Alcoholics Anonymous gatherings of this sort should be treated in a spirit of celebration, because I believe we're here to celebrate sobriety. And I'm not talking about the absence of chemicals in our system, I'm talking about the way we live. Because I've come to understand that that's what sobriety is. Now, when I said in my early meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the people of Alcoholics Anonymous talked to me about being sober, I didn't think Alcoholics Anonymous had anything to offer me. Because I was as physically sober when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on the fourth day of November, 1959, as I am right now. Just as physically sober. And that seemed to be the problem. That had always been my problem. And I've come to understand that the problem of the alcoholic, and I am an alcoholic, is not in his drunkenness, which seems to be his answer, but in his sobriety, which seems to be his problem. Because I was sober many times before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I kept getting loaded over and over and over again. So if you're new here in Alcoholics Anonymous tonight, and you're looking this thing over, and you hear us talk about sobriety, I would only pray one thing, and pray one thing to God for you tonight, is that you will stick around here long enough to find out what we mean when we say sobriety. Because we mean an entirely different concept of sobriety than the world outside these rooms seems to paint for the alcoholic. It's a little bit more. If sobriety was all I ever got out of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd have never stayed. But I've been here a long time. And I've come to understand that sobriety is the way I live. I live sobriety. Sobriety is my way of life. And the reason I tell you that is I lived a certain way for a long period of time, and for a long period of time I couldn't stay sober. Now, for a long period of time, I've lived an entirely different way, and all that period of time, it had been necessary for me to drink anything, swallow anything, smoke anything, or stick anything in my arm for a long, long time. And for that, I'm extremely grateful. Now, I'm extremely pleased to be here tonight, fully clothed and in my right mind. I tell you that because the longer I stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more necessary it becomes for me to remember from whence I came. And I never want to forget that a little over 29 years ago tonight, I crawled around on my knees in a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary, barking at the moon. Now, because of a loving God as he expressed himself through a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, it's no longer necessary for me to crawl around on my hands and knees like an animal. If I get nothing else out of this deal at all, I could live with that for a long time. But my God, what you've given me. I could stand here probably till the next 4th of July celebration and expound upon the things that Alcoholics Anonymous has done for my life and its people, because Alcoholics Anonymous is its people and its people are Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hope I never forget that. I hope I never forget that my answer to any question I may ever have in my lifetime lies between the cover of a book called Alcoholics Anonymous and its examples who practice those principles in their daily life for me to follow. I hope I never forget that. I'd like to be able to stand here tonight and tell you that where I got 29 years ago, That's where alcohol and drugs took me to. I'd like to be able to tell you that, but that's where I took me to. The only thing that alcohol and drugs did in my life, it kept me alive long enough to find Alcoholics Anonymous. That's all. See, I'm as sure as I'm standing here without alcohol working in my life, I'd have blown my brains out before I was 9 years old. I've always been an emotional misfit. I never belonged anywhere. I was always on the outside looking on the inside. I was always kind of restless and irritable and discontent. I was always wandering around with this tremendous wall of anger and hostility and bitterness in me. I don't know where it came from. I just had it. It was just always there, just waiting for it to explode on something. I don't know where it came from, but it was there. And I was angry about everything. I was angry before I ever knew what anger was. I was hostile before I knew what hostility was. I was bitter before I knew what bitterness was. That's just the way I was. I didn't know what that was, and it just kept mounting and mounting. And all that proves to me is that I was born without an answer. I was born needing an answer. Because I believe I was born looking. Because I started looking. Because I always knew in my life that it was wrong for me to feel that way. I've always known that. I've always known that it was wrong for me to hate and to be bitter and hostile and different. I always knew that. I didn't know why it was, but I knew it was, so I started looking for a way out. And wherever I went for answers, I became confused. I became confused by hearing the answer. I kept hearing things. I'm not so sure I heard what was wrong. I don't know. It just went in here and rattled around in this thing of mine and came out here different. And I had this family full of drunks that I lived with down here in Kansas. And they were the town drunks. They were the town bootleggers. And they were the town prostitutes. They were the town, well, they're the scum of the town is what they were. There they were. And there they were. And I didn't like them. And they used to gather up on the weekends and beat each other half to death. That was their deal. I guess whoever survived that week was the king. I don't know how they worked out their little arrangements, but I can understand that. See, I can understand violence, and I can understand bitterness. I can understand whipping on somebody. It just, you know, how you just makes you feel good all over. Kind of like a spiritual experience. It runs all through your body. Kind of. I can understand that. If you're bitter and hostile, you can understand. See, what I didn't understand, what confused me was, along about Wednesday, these people walked around with their arms around one another saying, "We love one another because we're family." And I guess way back there somewhere, I don't know, I said to myself, if that's what love is, you can keep it. Because I don't ever remember uttering the word love prior to coming into the program Alcoholics Anonymous. It wasn't in my vocabulary. I didn't use it. And the reason I didn't use it, because I knew that if I told you I loved you, you had an edge. And I never gave anybody an edge. And the reason I didn't give anybody an edge is because I'm a user. I'm a taker of things, I'm a user of people, and I'm an abuser. So therefore, I'm a loser. I'm selfish, I'm self-centered, I'm self-serving, and I'm self-seeking. I've got no room in my life to be concerned about other people. I'm only concerned about me. I'm only concerned about this rotten deal that I got, and these rotten people that I live with, and this rotten town. That's what I'm concerned with, and I want out. So I looked up one day, and there stood my grandmother. My grandmother lived till she was 90 years old. She didn't drink. My grandmother went to church, and she sang songs to Jesus. Weird little old woman, but that's what she was. She was strange, my grandmother. I mean, we'd be in the kitchen, Grandma and I, and she'd be baking, cooking and stuff, and singing songs to Jesus, and they'd be killing each other right down the hall. She'd just bring in the sheep, you know, and they'd come flying through the room in there, you know. Excuse me, and she sings songs. But see, Grandma to me was different than them. And because I was different than them, I thought I was like Grandma. And so I should go where Grandma goes, do what Grandma does, and be like Grandma because I'm different. Well, I went where Grandma went. I went over this little room that my Grandma went on the other side of town. It was a church. I never figured on one simple little thing, though. Wherever I went, I went. Try to grasp that. It's a little deep for you, I understand, but try to hang on to it. It's kind of the key to the whole ball game around here. I took this rotten attitude of mine with me. Took this bitterness and this hatefulness and this hostility with me, and I sit down in this room full of people, and I hated them all. I hated all them people I just left. And I hate all these people, too. And I sit there, and this man out of his rostrum and his long flowing robes, and I'm sitting there waiting for him to tell me why I feel the way I feel and what I'm supposed to do about it, and he tells me I'm supposed to love and honor and respect my parents. He says you're supposed to love your brothers and your sisters. And I didn't. I hated them. I hated them for reasons I didn't even understand, and God, I felt guilty about that. I became frightened to death sitting in that church. They're going to find out I was hating what I was supposed to be loving. I turned to walk outside the door of the church that day. The old man standing there, drunk and hungover, he tapped me on the head and said, "Son, if you continue to go to church, you're going to grow up to be just like me." I don't know what it did for the old man, but I ain't been back to church since. And it ain't got nothing to do with church. It got to do with my old man and me. It got an awful lot to do with me. My answer, don't lie there. Never had lied there. And I don't know why that is. Because I looked and it wasn't there. I said I was never going to drink alcohol. I saw what alcohol did. I lived in a house where these drunks were. I laid in a house in the middle of the night and listened to these two drunks working that house. I heard the screams and the yells and the cussing and the flesh hitting flesh and the breaking furniture and the deathly silence that comes on in houses like that. I lay there in the middle of the night when my old man's out there somewhere with my mother, and I know they're coming in, and I know it's going to start all over again. I lay there with my thoughts. I think about my uncles who live in penitentiaries, my aunts who work in those houses on the other side of the tracks. I think about my old man who beats up my mother who beats up my old man. I'm thinking about all that kind of nonsense. And it dawns on me, the problem was, it's alcohol. They drink, and they do those things. I'm not going to drink, because I'm not going to be like them. I'm going to be better than they are. I'm going to step out into that world. I'm going to have something. I'm going to do something. And I'm going to be something. What do you do if you're weird? Tell you what I did. I took a drink. It wasn't any big decision on my part. I just took a drink of alcohol. And it was the most fantastic thing that ever happened to me in my life. It went down inside of me and tore all the madness from me. It took me from the black pit of nothingness, stood me into the grave, friended the business of living, and installed in me an arrogance that said, "Damn you, world, it's all right. I'm not good enough to be around the good people, but I'm too good to be around the bad people. It's okay right here." And for the next 20 years of my life, I pursued that feeling into the gates of insanity and death and beyond. That feeling, not alcohol. Not the drugs that later followed the alcohol, but that feeling I got when that stuff went down in there and changed everything about me. It gave me that attitude of, I don't give it. What had gone on, it's all right. This is the way I want to be. That's what it is. Whatever penalties I had to pay for the next 20 years, whatever actions I ever had to take for the next 20 years of my life, whatever time of degenerate, self-loathing, self-destructive, filthy, corrupt thing I had to do for the next 20 years of my life, no matter how much of a penalty I had to pay, it was all right for what happened to me the minute I took a drink. I didn't care about anything else. And then people want to know, why do you drink? People who ask that question don't understand it any more than I understand why they don't. I heard Linda talk this afternoon, and God, I wanted to yell at her when she was in the middle of that insanity, "Why didn't you drink?" See, with alcohol is not an answer to her. And it was mine. And what happened to me when I drank alcohol happened to me every time I drank alcohol. I took a drink of alcohol, and 3 days later they pulled me out from underneath a bridge and stood me in front of a judge and sent me to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, I took a drink of alcohol. They pulled me out of a car in Compton, stood me in front of a judge, and sent me to 20 years in the penitentiary. That's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk and went places. I traveled around out there. I went from reform school, to junior penitentiary, to penitentiaries, to nut houses. Just kind of like a postgraduate course, just working my way right through there. I don't know, sitting on a furlough from a reform school one day, I'm 10 or 11 years old. Alcohol is not working in my life no more. I remember that day as vividly as I remember today. I remember how great anticipation I sat down on the street corner with a gallon of Marco Petri red wine and tried to still the screaming madness that was going on inside of me. And the harder I drank that stuff, the further away it went. I just couldn't make it go away anymore. And I sat there and drank the whole gallon of wine, and I'm sober as I am right now, and the madness is all about me. The guy come along and tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Why don't you try these?" And he gave me some pills. I don't remember saying to him, "What are those? Will they bother me?" Thank God they weren't X-lax. That's all I know. We could start a whole new 12-step program called Laxities Anonymous on that. You know? How'd you like to be able to stand at the podium and say, "I'm an adult child of a laxative taker"? I would have been functional, but Mom was on the pot all the time. That isn't any more bizarre than some of the things I hear around here all day. They work. That's all I can tell you. Thank God they work. Sitting on that same street corner on a furlough from another reform school 2 or 3 years later, alcohol and pills and I worked in my life. A guy stuck a needle in my arm. And for the next 14 years of my life, I stuck needles in my arm running in and out of institutions, using and abusing and taking and ripping and roaring and doing the things I had to do out there on them streets. I lived out there in them city streets. That's what I did out there. I took and I used and I abused. I did whatever I had to do to survive out there in them city streets. And whatever penalty came down the road, it came down the road. That's all. Whoever had to use up. I hear people and say in Alcoholics Anonymous that they drank this up and they drank this up and they drank that up. Not me. I used up everything. I used up everything and everybody and every single thing and circumstance that came into my life. I used them up. And when I had no more use for them, I discarded them like so much trash. I had no more use for them. Not a thought. I just threw them aside. I had no more thoughts for them until I was sober. Until I was sober. And then the faces started to appear. And the nightmares and the deeds and the things that I had done started to sink in onto me. And how I wanted not to be that way no more. And then I'd have to go on and on and on. And the very mysterious thing that happened to me in my life was that somewhere in that lottery of life, I don't know where it was, everything quit working. Everything quit working. I just could not do it anymore. I just couldn't do it. A guy I sponsor says it better than anything I've ever heard. He says, "Run around out there physically drunk and mentally sober." God, what a terrible dilemma that is. I spent the last 10 years of my life running around out there trying to find the answer to a hypodermic syringe 10 years after it quit working. In the back of my mind was this little thought. It worked once. It has to work again. Good God, it has to work again. In 1951, I'm on my way to the penitentiary and I stood in the old Los Angeles County Jail. I heard my mother scream at me through the visiting screen that I was a murderer. That my 17-year-old brother, the only thing I cared anything about in my life prior to coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, was dead. That I had killed him, that he had gotten into some of my poison, took an overdose of it and died. I didn't know how to handle that. People who don't have feelings don't know how to handle things like that. I knew I was supposed to feel something. I didn't know what it was I was supposed to feel. I knew I was supposed to have some concern, but I had no concern. 3 days later, I stood handcuffed between two detectives out underneath a tree, and I buried my baby brother with all the guilt and shame and humiliation and degradation of a lifetime hanging around my shoulders, and I'd like to have been able to cry, but I didn't know how. I didn't have the simple gift of tears that God gives every creature that's born on the face of this earth, and the reason I didn't have them because I didn't think they were necessary. I spent the next 4.5 years of my life in a penitentiary. I came out of there 4.5 years sicker than I was when I went in there. I tried to prove what a psychiatrist in San Quentin told me wasn't true. He said, "People like me didn't change." He said, "Johnny, you're doomed to die in an institution." He took me down and showed me a little green room. He says, "You're going to end up here hot shot." And I told him, "Not me. I'm different. I'm different." I come walking out of that institution bound, determined. I had that deal beaten. 6 months later, I'm laying in a nut house kicking and screaming. And that's when I made my round to some of the better laughing academies in the country, interviewing psychiatrists. I used to talk to doctors. I'd sit there with my wraparound overcoat on and talk to them. And we would engage in this meaningful conversation. They'd talk to me about my mother, and I'd talk to them about their mother. And that's when they introduced me to better living through electricity. They said I had a bad attitude. I did have a bad attitude. You'd have a bad attitude, too. They shock you senseless for 3 days for no reason. I mean, do you think it's any reason to shock somebody's senses for 3 days because they drive across the desk and try to strangle you. I did that stuff sober. I even did it one time with two attendants in a straitjacket. I tried to butt him. I was sober. That's what I did. Cold, so see what sobriety did for me? Well, it's really going out there, wasn't it? And you know, when I'd get sober in one of them places, I'd hear the same old song from different people with the same music. The same music you hear today. I would sit there when I was a kid in reform school. I heard it. Later on in junior, senior reform schools and junior penitentiaries and penitentiaries in Nut House, I heard the same words. I sat across the table from some of the finest minds in the field of psychiatry the world has ever known. I sat across the table from some of the finest minds in the field of criminology that the world has ever known. I've had some of the best lawyers, the doctors, teachers, preachers, wardens that this world has ever known who've written volumes of books about behavioral problems. I've sat across the desk from them, and you know what they all said to me? Without a word, they could have all read the same script. They said, Johnny, if you didn't drink these things and swallow these things and smoke these things and shoot these things, you wouldn't have any problems. And not one time did any of them people ever seem to understand that every time they told me that, I was as physically sober as I am right now. As physically sober. How I wanted to scream out at them, good God, don't you understand? Don't you understand? If you take this madness from inside of me, take the things I've done away from me, I won't have to put that other stuff in me. But I didn't know that. See, I hadn't been here. I only heard thou shalt not. You shouldn't do these things, Johnny. I could not keep from doing them. I had to do them because I could not stand it when I was not doing them. And I'm looking for that answer, and it's no longer an answer. And it's driving me crazy. I don't know what to do. No answer. And so I do what any self-respecting alcoholic like me does when his answer is no longer an answer. I tried to kill myself. It don't work either. I can't do that. I tried hard. I locked myself up in a hotel room in Huntington Park with an ounce of heroin, and 3 days later I came out of there sick looking for the connection. I didn't know what was going on. 30 years ago, last January, they tied me down to bed in the old Los Angeles County Jail, more dead than alive. I'd had 2 years of doing to me just exactly what I wanted to do to me anytime I wanted to do it to me. 2 years. That's the most classic example of self-will run riot I've ever known. 2 years. And I killed me. I literally killed me. I weighed 128 pounds and I was yellow and I was tied down in this bed with my left arm and my right leg. And there was a medical doctor standing at the foot of my bed telling me I was going to die. That was all right with me. I don't want to live anyhow. I just tried to kill myself and couldn't do it. He left, and all day passed, and all night passed. He came back into my room the next morning. He said, son, you're going to die. Nothing we can do for you. I said, okay. The third day he came into my room, this terror gripped me. I've never known before since. The idea came to me that I was going to live and not die. Going to get up out of that bed, go to the penitentiary, and come back out and start that rat race all over again. I didn't want to do that. I laid there for 18 days and 18 nights. I didn't eat, sleep, drink, or do anything. I just laid there. And one night, because I knew nothing better to do, I screamed out the only prayer I'd ever said in my life. I said, oh, God, help me. I thought for a long, long time nothing had happened because there was no blinding flashes of light. Nobody come running down the hall with a dozen donuts saying, we got an AA meeting down there. I didn't get up and wander off into the tulip somewhere. I just went to sleep for a little while. I'll tell you how sick I was. 2 weeks, two short weeks later, I'm up out of that deathbed of mine, running around in jail looking for some more of the poison, put me back on the bed I'd just gotten off of. And the reason I'm doing that is because in the back of my mind, in the back of my mind, once upon a time, when I could not stand it any longer, I ingested something into my system and it made it okay. And even though it wasn't working anymore, and I knew it wasn't working anymore, I knew it would if I could just find the right combination of things. It's the only thing that had ever worked. It is the only thing that had ever driven the madness out of me. It has to work again. I stood in front of a Superior Court judge and was called a blood-sucking parasite in society. He told me I didn't have any right being around decent people. I told a woman sitting in the courtroom who was the mother of my child, if you cared anything about that child, this bum will never be allowed to lay eyes on it. And he didn't tell me anything I didn't know. That was the first time I ever heard it. But he didn't tell me anything that I didn't know. See, I have always known what I am. I have never been able to lie to me about that. I have never been able to lie to me about what kind of a blood-sucking parasite scum of the bag of the earth that I am. I have never been able to lie to me. I've always known that I used and abused and destroyed lives. I had a track record to prove it. I could look back on it and see the path of destruction that everybody that came into my life was destroyed. I destroyed everything that came into my life. Like a wild, crazy thing that just ate them up. And he didn't have to say that. That's the first time I'd ever heard it. That's the first time I'd ever heard anybody describe me the way I was. I knew it. The evidence was so damning that I spent the next 9 months of my life crawling around in a cell in solitary confinement, barking at the moon. On the first Sunday in November 1959, through no great effort of my own, because of an answer to a prayer that I made in a deathbed 30 years ago last January, I wandered into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why I'm here. In the answer to a prayer that I made in a deathbed, God help me. Simple little prayer. In all rights and probability, that night I surrendered. If I'd have known where I was coming that Sunday, I would not have come. If somebody would have said to me, "Are you going to that AA meeting?" I wouldn't have come. I was not an alcoholic. I didn't know what an alcoholic was, but I wasn't one anyhow. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous over 28 and a half years ago to smell perfume. And I've been honking and sniffing around here ever since. You got to be careful what gets us in here. I remember sitting in the back row in what I lovingly like to call my throne of contempt. Had my coat collar up and my shades on because I was cool. If I'd have been any cooler when I got here, I'd have probably froze to death, for God's sake. I remember looking up on the backboard. I saw two big gates, and I thought to myself, "My God, I've wandered into an anti-aircraft brigade." I did not know what Alcoholics Anonymous was. I said to this clown sitting next to me, "What is this?" He said, "It's Alcoholics Anonymous." Loudly. And I sunk down in my seat. Gangsters weren't supposed to be hanging out with them winos. If it had been Gangsters Anonymous or Over Hip Anonymous or Dope Fiends Anonymous, doesn't that have a ring of machoism about it? Dope Fiends! Oh! Kind of makes addicts seem kind of candy ass, doesn't it? Yeah. And I thought, well, I'll wait for these women to get up and tell their racy story. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, there weren't any pretty young ladies. They just weren't. And these old gals got up to talk, and they said they drank a long time. You could look at them and know they'd been somewhere for a long time. They said, "I used to drink." And I said, "I bet you did, Mama." And not good stuff either. You know, you got all the answers. You don't need to ask any questions. There was something about these people. I didn't know what it was then. I know what it is today. There was something about these people who were out there in the business of living, who were given a little just for the hell of giving it, who spent all day Sunday driving 185 miles up to this penitentiary to talk to these convicts who didn't want to listen to them, and turned around and drove back. And these were old roads, bad roads. They drove over these things. These people had sort of a twinkle in their eye and a smile on their face. And they sort of radiated this certain thing that these certain special people in Alcoholics Anonymous have who are out there giving a little just for the hell of giving it. They have it, these people. And I'm sorry to tell you, everybody doesn't have it. I just want to let you know that. Because everybody who comes here is not willing to do that. They just aren't. They aren't willing to commit themselves to Alcoholics Anonymous, because most people who come to Alcoholics Anonymous think a commitment means convenience. I didn't know that. I didn't know any of this stuff. These people talked about God to me that day. And when I came here and you talked to me about God, I left. I came back to your meetings the following Sunday because you were here. That's why I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous, to see the people, for the same reason I came to Omaha, see the people. That's why I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. There's magic in these people. There is magic here in these people. I don't know wherever I said. I looked all over the world before I came here and found it here. I didn't know what it was I was sitting in my early meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous because I was so very sick. I do know that I sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous long enough to have the miracle happen to me, to a little man stand at a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous and tell me something that all the great learned people I ever knew in my life never knew. He told me I didn't have to live that way anymore if I didn't want to. He says, you don't have to do it like this no more. And nobody had ever told me that. They told me not to drink, swallow, smoke, and shoot, but they didn't tell me how to live without doing it. See, that's what I wanted to know. How do you live in a world you don't belong to? That wants no part of you and you don't want any part of. And the only thing that makes it bearable for just an instant is something that you ingest into your system. After the meeting, I went up to this little man and I said, how do you learn how to live? He said, Johnny, there's a book called Alcoholics Anonymous in the library. You go get it. I'll go and pray that you find some part of you in it. I guess he's prayed real hard, that little fellow, because I've been a student of the book Alcoholics Anonymous from that day to this day. And the only thing I've ever found in that book is me. I don't look for anything else. I'm not looking for a way to sober up the world or cure all of society's ills. I'm looking for a way to live peacefully and comfortably and joyously with me and the loving God that made me. Now, there is a strange phenomena that takes place in my life, and that I'd like to share with you. It seemed like to me that the closer I adhere to the principles that are written in that book, and the more willing I become to share that knowledge in this fellowship, the more peaceful and the more comfortable and the more joyous I live with me and the loving God that made me. But I had a lot of trouble when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I wasn't an alcoholic. I didn't know what an alcoholic was. And I think you confused me more than anybody else. You confused me more than anybody in my life had ever confused me when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm not sure it's what you said, it's what I heard. I would sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous back here and you would say things like, I used to drink. Now I don't drink anymore and everything is wonderful. I'd say, I'm not an alcoholic then. I'm not drinking either and I'm crazy. God, I wish I was an alcoholic. If I could just be an alcoholic. And then I hear you say, you got to get active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got up and ran around like a chicken with my head cut off. I picked up ashtrays, smiled at people. Wonderful. Nay, nay. You like it in our happy fellowship? Be joyous and free like we are. And I went back and sat in inventory point and died. I was doing everything you told me to do and I was crazy. Everything. And I'd say the logical thing, I'm not an alcoholic. If I was an alcoholic, all I would have to do is not drink, pick up these damned ashtrays, and I'd be wonderful like they are. So I'm not an alcoholic. There's something else wrong with me. And then you'd hear people in Alcoholics Anonymous. They say things like, good things start to happen to you when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous. People start to recognize the changes in you when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm getting ready to go to the parole board. I want some changes being recognized. 10 days before I got ready to go to the parole board, they called me in front of a man and gave me a letter from a judge and said my wife had divorced me and taken my infant child back to the Midwest and I was never supposed to see him again. 10 days later, I went in front of a parole board and they told me I couldn't go home. And I hated you. I hated you more than anything else I'd ever hated in my life. Because for the first time in my life, in a long, long time, I had allowed myself to break one of my rules. Never let anybody know that you care for them, I used to say. Never let anybody know that. Never reach your hand up out of the gutter, I used to say, because they'd come along and kick in the teeth. I used to live by that. And for an instant, I allowed myself to believe you. And you kicked me in the gut. That was my thinking. So I went back to the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous to tell you about it. But I never got to the podium. I sit in the front row of that meeting. I held an old lady's hand by the name of Myrtle Snyder. And she told me over and over and over again, honey, there has to be a reason for everything that happens to you in this lifetime. What she told me wasn't really important. The way I felt when she held my hand was, You see, she held my hand in a penitentiary a long, long time ago, this old lady. And I had a feeling about me that everything was going to be all right. I knew everything was going to be all right. I also knew that the minute I let go of her hand, I wasn't going to have that. Because I knew that was hers, it was not mine. I knew that she had given me that. And when she got ready to leave that institution that day, I said to her, "Mom, what was that?" Because she was the closest thing to a mother I've ever known. She said, "Honey, the answer to any question you may ever have in your lifetime lies between the covers of the book called Alcoholics Anonymous." And I believe I went to the book Alcoholics Anonymous to find that thing, that feeling I got when I held her hand. And somewhere sitting in a room with a man, telling him about every rotten, filthy, corruptible thing I'd ever done, I heard myself admit to this man that I was an alcoholic. I had never said it before. It was not in my vocabulary. I didn't know it. From inside of me, way down deep inside of me, came this word, "I am an alcoholic." And from inside of me came a freedom that I carry with me to this very instant. And the reason I carry this freedom with me, you see, I know what's wrong with me. I'm an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic and anything. When I was an alcoholic and something, I couldn't have this program. But you see, I'm an alcoholic. That makes me just like you. Not better than, not worse than, not different than. For the first time in my entire life, when I admitted to that man that I was an alcoholic, I was no longer different. I belonged to something that I was just like everybody else there. I was an alcoholic. See, I had always been restless and irritable and discontent, but I didn't know that was symptoms of my illness. I didn't know that. I didn't know that that was a symptom of untreated alcoholism. I didn't know that at all. I didn't know it. I knew it that day. And I believe that day, from that day to this minute, I made a commitment to myself that I would spend every waking moment of my life trying to keep this monster that lives inside of me at bay. Because that's what I am, you see. I'm a monster. I'm a blood-sucking parasite in society. I'm not an animal. Animals don't do the things that I did before I got sober. Animals weren't the kind of hate, vicious, no good, self-loathing, self-hating, destructive thing that I was when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I sat around in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and spewed out hate and filth. It's all I was capable of. It's all I knew. The world I came from. Like something, like a creature from another planet or something. Destroyed everything that came in contact with me. And so the people of Alcoholics Anonymous put their arms around me and started to love me well. They set me in their laps and they rocked me to sleep. And they sang me love songs. And oh, what you've done in my life. You were more concerned about saving my life and you weren't hurting my feelings. And a little thing down inside of me started that... A little spark was lit inside of me that day that old lady held my hand that now is a raging bonfire inside of me. It's my love for the people of Alcoholics Anonymous and for Alcoholics Anonymous in general. It just grows with leap and bound every year that I'm sober. Every day that I'm sober. Every day I look up and see the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous and reflect back upon the miracle that Alcoholics Anonymous has done in my life. That fire grows and leaps and bounds, and I was telling my lovely wife tonight as we were walking around the parking lot that if I spent every waking moment of my life trying to give back to you what you've given to me, I'd never be able to do it. There's not enough time left for me to do it. You know, you set me in rooms, and you word by word, sentence by sentence, paragraph by paragraph, fed me the English language. You told me cussing was a crutch for conversational cripples. You were more concerned in saving my life than you were in hurting my feelings. You picked me up at the door of a penitentiary 27 years ago last month, and you took me into a world I didn't know anything about. Like a wild animal, you turned me into a world I didn't know anything about. The only thing I had going for me when I came out of that penitentiary was Alcoholics Anonymous. I went home to see my mother. She fell off the steps blind drunk. I picked her up and I put her on a couch and said, "Mom, I'm going to an AA meeting." She said, "Fine, I think you should." I'd like to tell you my mother's sober, but my mother's not sober. My mother drinks whiskey. She drinks whiskey out of a bottle, a half a pint at a time, because alcoholics drink at a pint at a time. I've learned the most fantastic lesson in my life from my mother. I learned I don't have the power to get anybody sober. I don't have the power to get them drunk either. I don't even have any power to get me sober. Where would I get any power? Power? That book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the book of experiences that I live by, tells me that I am powerless. I don't have any power, that I've got a daily reprieve. That means I got right now. This is it. I don't get no brownie points for what I've done in the preceding 28 years that I've been an Alcoholics Anonymous. I get to sleep tonight with some type of peace with my arms around my woman because of what I do today. My woman won't live in fear and hostility because I'm going to have to throw her out on the streets, make her make money. She don't live with that type of person anymore. Because of you. It's fantastic what you've done in my life. Fantastic what my sponsor taught me. I had a sponsor who must have went to school for hard-hearted sponsors. He didn't know anything about sensitivity. Not at all. He hurt me terribly. He did. He told me I had to go to work. I didn't understand that. My wife had come back and she's got this little girl here and she's pregnant again. I didn't know why I was sober. That's why I used to tell him, "You ought to go to work, Johnny." I said, "What?" He said, "Work. W-O-R-K. Work." I wanted to... I know nobody in Omaha was like this, but I wanted a position. I didn't want to work. I wanted a position. I thought somebody ought to reward me for being sober. I wasn't in the penitentiary, and I wasn't, and I was sober. Don't you think I deserve something for that? I'm going to caution you. If you can say a prayer, you better say this one. That you better pray that I don't get what I deserve right now. You better hope God keeps me in His mercy. That He doesn't give me perfect justice right now. Because if I get perfect justice, you are in deep pucky right this moment. This place will be a hole. Because there ain't nothing I ever did in my life. Maybe you did. Nothing I have ever done in my life that would ever entitle me the privilege to live the way I live. Nothing. Because I've examined that very thoroughly. I went back and looked over my life to try to figure out what it is that I did that would make it bearable for me to live this way. And there's nothing I did. Nothing. So I have to assume that what I've been given here is a gift from a loving, merciful God who loves me even though I don't even know that He loves me, who seems to understand a long time before I ever knew it that I am one of His children. He seemed to know that a long time before I ever... See, I never knew that. See, I never knew I was one of God's kids. I never knew that at all. I always thought somebody else was. I always thought that God hated me. I thought He was the God my grandmother talked about who punished little boys who were bad, who'd been kicking me around before I ever done anything. I didn't know I was one of God's kids. And the reason I wasn't treated like one of God's kids is because I didn't act like one of His children. But you see, that's no fault of mine, because I didn't know how to act like one of His children. I had to be taught to act like one of His children. You taught me. You taught me. By my imitating you, I started to act like one of His children. I didn't know that. I didn't know that to act like one of God's children, I had to do the things that God's children do. I didn't know that because I didn't know what God's children do. See, God's children do not take, use and abuse and strangle everything that comes inside of its lifetime. And when it gets done with it, it discards. God's children don't do that. God's children give a little just for the hell of giving it, even though they don't want to. even though it would be easier for them to sit back and do their God's children. Give a little for the hell of giving. I didn't know that. My sponsor used to talk about it all the time. Spend a day out there in them city streets, he used to tell me, just being yourself. I didn't know who I was. How was I going to know who I was? I've been so many things to so many people for so long. How would I know? I can't spend a day out there in them city streets being a convict dope fiend. Because I wasn't that anymore. I didn't look like one. My sponsor taught me what I was supposed to do in Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. He taught me what I was supposed to do. He taught me to respect you. That's what my sponsor taught me. My sponsor was my sponsor for 22 years before he died. Probably one of the greatest examples of Alcoholics Anonymous I've ever known in my life. And coincided with him, I had a father in Alcoholics Anonymous, an old man who was like a father to me. I lived with him for 25 years sober before he died. He taught me what fathers teach children. He taught me to be kind and loving. He taught me to be concerned about other human beings. My sponsor taught me in a different way. My sponsor told me to shut up when I talked in meetings. Yelled at me. He would not take me to meetings if I would show up at his car door in shorts and tank tops. He'd say things like to me, "Would you go to church like that?" And I'd say, "No." He says, "You ain't going to my church like that either." And so my sponsor's church became my church. This is my church. If God ain't here, he ain't anywhere. If he ain't here with you, he ain't no place. I've been everywhere else. But I'll tell you, I'm more aware of God's mercy and God's goodness and God's presence in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous than I am anywhere else upon the face of this earth. Anywhere. Because most of the time, whenever I'm somewhere else, I'm by myself. And I am my own worst enemy. I am my own worst problem. That's why it's necessary for me to be sponsored in Alcoholics Anonymous. Not to have a sponsor, but to be sponsored. There is a difference of having a sponsor and being sponsored. There is a big difference. And because of God's mercy, I have always had a man who sponsored me. I didn't report to him. He sponsored me. And I can't stand here and tell you every day I've lived has been a banquet or a feast. I've been walking down the sunny side of the streets. I'd be lying to you. I live in a world that I don't belong in. So therefore, if I don't belong in the world, I make mistakes in the world. I become selfish and self-centered and self-seeking from time to time. And I crowd people out and I move things out and I change things and I get ideas that I should have there and be more and have more. So therefore, I get to pay the consequences for my actions. I get to suffer the guilt and the remorse when businesses fail. I'm the one who gets to go down to the IRS and pay back the thousands of dollars that come from my own egotistical sense of values and my own egotistical ideas about what I'm doing. I'm the one who gets to sit and ponder the idea because his marriage fails. I'm the one who does that. I'm the one who gets to live with the guilt and the question and the remorse of what I could have done because my first wife committed suicide. I'm the one who gets to sit and wander and ponder and think about what I would have done because my children are not the way I want them to be. Because my youngest daughter got into alcohol and drugs, but she's sober now, thank God. And my oldest daughter, the one I was never supposed to see, is the mother of three of the prettiest little boys you ever saw in your life. It's amazing. I want to tell you a little something. If anybody ever tells you that Alcoholics Anonymous is not enough, you can bet one thing, they have never tried Alcoholics Anonymous. If they ever tried it, the reason I can tell you that is because I haven't been anywhere else. In the 28 and a half years that I wandered into your meetings or crawled in here a slime from the dark lagoon or wherever I was from, to this very instant, I have never sought out any other type of therapy. I have never found it any necessary to educate myself beyond my intellect. You think that's funny, huh? You know, my wife is really supporting me on that one. And I stand here before you tonight and I would tell you something. I wouldn't trade places with anybody who lives upon the face of this earth. I've been all day long today. I haven't wanted to be anybody else. Can you possibly understand what that is to a guy like me? All my life, I wanted to be somebody else, somewhere else, with somebody else, doing something else. And now I've been all day today, I don't want to be anywhere else. I don't want to be anybody else. I don't want to be married to anybody else. I don't want to live anywhere else. I don't want any other sponsor. I don't want any other home group. I'm perfectly happy with what I do. Because I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And Alcoholics Anonymous has reaped its love upon me in such abundance. And I'd like to tell you something that Chuck's shared with me because it goes along with what I've been trying to tell you about. I run around with this old man that I love who was like my father. And I sat with him for a year and watched him die. And I loved him probably more than any other human being I've loved upon the face of this earth. He taught me the very essence of love. And I watched him, and when he died, I loved him more than I'd ever loved him because I watched him be a human being. I never had him on a pedestal. He's just always with my daddy. And one time I was going with him somewhere, and I tried to tell him that read that little thing, that little piece of gossip that runs around in some AA meetings that says why we were chosen. And he wouldn't allow me to read it to him. And he wouldn't allow me to read it to him for a very simple reason, that he didn't believe, like I don't believe, that we're any special people. I don't believe that at all. I don't believe that I'm special, and I don't believe that you're special. I believe, like Papa believed, that we're all God's children. All of us are. If I am, you are. And if you are, I am. He told me that rain falls upon the just as well as the unjust. That's what he said. And then when I said to him, then, Papa, how come I'm sober? How come I'm sober? I know people who are far better people than I'll ever be who aren't sober. My mother is a far better person than I'll ever be. My little mother. When my little mother is sober, she's kind and generous and giving. I'm not. I'm selfish and self-centered most of the time. Once in a while, I'm generous and giving, but not like my mother. So why am I sober and my mother's not sober? And Papa said it's very simple. He said, you've come to believe that you're one of God's children, and so you're starting to act like it. And so I guess when he told me that from this day to this day, he said, if you don't go tell them, they'll never know it. So from that moment to this moment, my primary purpose in life has been to stay sober and to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. I don't have any other purpose for living. I don't have any reason for being here. My primary purpose in life is to stay sober and to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And I don't know which alcoholic is suffering. So I just throw it out on anybody and let them have it. My answer to you is, if you want me, is if the date's open, it belongs to you. See, I don't have any Christmases, 4th of July, birthday, Thanksgiving, wedding anniversaries, children's birthdays. I don't have any of them things. Every day of my life is Christmas. Every day of my life is the 4th of July. Every day of my life is my birthday. Every day of my life is a celebration of life, because I got a brand new day every day I wake up. And when I go to bed that night, my day will be predicated on how much and how often I've been able to get rid of me that day. Papa told me one time when I said to him, "You talk about surrender all the time." He said, "Yes." I said, "Then how come in my deathbed when I surrendered, I was loaded 2 weeks later?" And he laughed and said, "It's very simple, son. You have to surrender all the time. It's a constant daily thing. I got to get up every day and give me away. It's the most simple thing that I know of. I get up and give me away." And never in the world has any place ever been more appropriate for me than to come here and to give myself to you. And in giving myself to you, I become more concerned about you than I am me. Isn't that amazing? To think that a thing like me could be more concerned about a human being, another human being on God's earth, than he is about himself. Is there no reason that I should love you more than anything in the world? Is there any reason that a guy like me shouldn't spend every waking moment of his life trying to serve you and serve this fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous? I guess I could stand here until I was blue in the face and thank you for the things that you've given me, for the way I feel and the way I'm going to feel, for the things that are mine and the things that are going to be mine. I guess I could thank you for everything. What I'd really like to do, I think, is that I'd like to thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. But I think even more than that, in my own personal life, I would like to thank you and Alcoholics Anonymous for my God. Thank you.